Good morning. We've been talking about the sixth patriarch, and all of you in here, and maybe the new folks may or may not know, but one of the greatest personalities in the history of Zen. And all of the contemporary Zen schools flow through his teaching. And also for the new folks, move if you feel tired or you feel some pain. We don't encourage a lot of physical suffering here. The whole point is what we do with the mind. And trying to identify the mind becomes the most difficult situation here. Because normally what we think of as mind is what goes on between our ears. And we can say that, yes, this is the mind that, let's say, the great Bodhidharma calls the mind of passion. We can call it, like the third patriarch in the Shinshin Ming, the picking and choosing mind. See, we can call it dualistic thinking. We can call it ego mind. But when we talk about Buddha mind, this enlightened state, this enlightened nature, see, it has nothing whatsoever to do with what you're thinking behind your eyes. That's dualistic. And again, always we come to the same point, that if you're sitting there talking to yourself now, thinking that whatever you understand in between your ears, behind your eyes, is somehow or another it, you've missed the point. And in going through these great teachers like this, it also reminds me of what my teacher said about constantly talking about the same thing. Those of you, all of you in here know that I continuously am complaining about having to give talks. I don't like to give talks. I would prefer just to do the practice. But this is the practice. And somehow or another, we have to be able to bring it down through words, or we will all be hopelessly lost. The old masters could bring it through words. If it isn't brought down through words, then it's dead. So we have to use the words. And then it becomes part of the teacher's practice, and to somehow or another, not become overly saturated, nauseated by saying the same thing over and over and over again. See, one of the things that I feel that I, for me at least, the thing that I most vigorously want you to experience and try to experience is that the teaching of Buddha Dharma is real. See, still, some of you still play with this as a conceptual game. Transformation is absolutely possible. Kensho, enlightenment. You hear this and you read it, you know. How many teachers today actually believe there is such a thing as enlightenment? They don't. And to call themselves Buddhist is false. There is Kensho, there is enlightenment. And the story of the Buddha is one of enlightenment. What does enlightenment mean? It means to simply wake up. So long as you were caught in the dream world, in behind your eyes, so long as you're caught conceptualizing, see, and then, see, you conceptualize, you react to the thoughts, the concepts that you're holding, the emotions that flood you, and then you project outward. See, but there is no outward. So you simply project into yourself and you cause yourself to live in this spin, this delusional place of samsara. And that spin is totally insane. It's totally crazy. See, this is the great teaching of the Buddha. Life is suffering. When we say life is suffering, what life is he talking about? He's talking about the life that you're experiencing right here, right now, if you're trapped in delusional thought. What is delusional thought? See, experiencing yourself as separate. See, and the thing that is happening today that is so dynamic in the world is the field of quantum physics is now moving more, see, into the plane of spiritual understanding of the universe. I'm talking in terms of to think of what kind of impact one person waking up has on the entire universe. We know in the world of quantum physics, the meteorologist from MIT, years and years ago, I think in 1957, his name was there for a moment, it slips away from me. See, he said that a butterfly flapping its wings in Brazil It is so interrelated. Causes a rainstorm in New York 2 weeks later. Now, in the world of quantum physics, in the quantum world, see, all things are interconnected. And it goes beyond space and time. It transcends that. See, and that, now, is the world of science. Of course, there's a split. There will always be. There will be those who practice the classical sense of materialism, that the whole being, the whole cosmos, is based on material things, and that we try to break the material. We take a grain of sand and we try to break it down. I thought Kevin Wilber spoke to this eloquently. See, somehow or another, if we can reduce a grain of sand down to its subatomic particles, we will know something about the universe. Nothing. And I'll tell you what they know, that it is a bleak, barren place. That it's a place that's frightening because there is nothing there. But there is, in fact, a beach, an ocean. See, there's beautiful sunset. They're simply looking in the wrong way. This is what all of the teachings of the great Buddha Dharma. Remember, Buddhism is to bring about a transformation in your life so that you experience your moment to moment, see, in a great joyful way. If that isn't happening, your practice is wrong. You have chosen to stay caught, see, in your ruminating mind. You have chosen to stay caught in the illusory, the delusional mind of separation. Again, let me hammer this. Separation, the three poisons that bring about the world of pain and suffering of samsara. See, what are they? Greed, anger, and ignorance. And ignorance is the granddaddy. And what is ignorance? Make Buddha Dharma simple for yourself. Ignorance is simply that you experience yourself in a state of separation. And in the world, see, of quantum physics now, the world that Omid Goswami and more of these are talking about day and day. And one of the things, by the way, do you know what they're coming up with now? Not just him, some of the other physicists, see. Is there a point? Is there a point? Is there a reason? And they're now beginning to say, it seems that the universe, the whole focus on the universe, has to do with us. With how we begin to experience reality. We're waking up. This is now not a great spiritual teachers, although they're moving in that direction. But see, it doesn't make sense if you want to use their rational mind. It makes sense if all of a sudden this great Buddha mind, Buddha, what mind are we talking about? Not an Asian god, get rid of that. Buddha mind simply means the enlightened mind. And where is the enlightened mind? It's right here, right now. See? And that everything, if I can say, conspires to bring about this most amazing sense of serenity, fearlessness. If you truly can penetrate through the barrier of your discriminating consciousness, and it's you who hold that up, it's you who won't release and give up on your notions of how things are. How things are. That's dualistic thinking, see? In the sixth patriarch, I'm going to jump to this in a minute, but I wanted to, again, get you to realize this. The point behind Buddha Dharma is the enhancement of your life. Scholars and a lot of people, see, because Buddha said life is suffering, so they see it as fatalistic, negative, nihilistic. It's not at all. Buddha is talking about samsara. See? And he tells you, why it is suffering. See? And it's suffering because we hold on to a personal agenda. See? And if we even try to project out the notions of I want in a new agey la-la land, that doesn't work either because it is still driven behind your personal ego agenda. Just change if you want to flip your feet around too, do. Make it easy for yourself. So long as you experience yourself as separate, folks, you're never going to find the kind of tranquility. You know, that's why they develop Prozac and whatever the hell else they do. That for folks that can't find reality. And so what you do, you drug yourself. See? We bombard ourselves with all sorts of electrical stimulation. We ingest everything we can to try to find a little peace. And we always come back to the same place. There is a low-grade infection, see, because we're fragmented. We're schizophrenic. See, schizophrenia, separation. See, and then I take this non-real state, the state of separation, and I act as if it's real. See, and I set up what I like against what I don't like. I set up me against everything else. Everything is a threat, a potential threat. Ego isn't bad. It's trying to make me safe. But it can't make me safe in a world of impermanence. It's constantly changing. And even ego changes and is empty. Empty means nothing is fixed. There is no static entity within the whole universe. It is constant flux, constant change, energy moving. And this is not dead energy. This is not blind energy. This is not a vacuum. Each person in here is aware. See? And this great Buddha mind, see, in its most direct sense, see, is Muji. See? And how it affects, how it manifests, is how we sit here now. And if we can see that, and Buddha said, see, but it isn't the seeing of a sentient being. It isn't seeing Nyogen here, seeing everything in separation. Everything outside of myself. You know, folks, the scientists are telling you now, outside of yourself, the scientists, what you're seeing and hearing now, this is going on inside the visual cortex of your brain. Think about it. I say this how many times? Domon must have heard me say it 1,000 times. But you should be stunned by that. That isn't a spiritual teacher telling you that, a scientist is telling you that, coming right out of Stanford. See, the illusion, the brain has the capacity to project an illusion of separation. There's something out here, but there is no technology. There is no way to measure it. They cannot tell you where outside and inside stop or begin. Where have we heard that before? 2,500 years ago, a little guy sitting in a cave with a dirty blanket around him said, no outside world, no inside world, and then for you smartasses, he says, and no in between. See, that's the world of oneness. And Buddha said, that is the illusion, see, and that illusion is delusional thinking. I am separate. And consequently, I sit in a world of fear. When that is wiped away, and that can be done, that's why we sit. And what do I have to get out of the way? My thinking mind, the mind of separation. If I get rid of that, then I experience the most amazing state of oneness. See, and that's reality. And there is just this rising and settling. See, I transcend. See, I transcend the limited world. See, the material world is an illusory body. But if you understand it from that standpoint and you try to play, it doesn't bring the transformation. You have to take the backward step. The sixth patriarch said, good friends, since ancient times, this Dharma teaching of ours, both its direct and indirect versions for new people, it means instant enlightenment or gradual. And he's already dismantled that. He says, it isn't that in this Buddha mind, you, some of you get this. This is the enlightened mind if you're not caught here. And in this, it has nothing to do with direct or indirect, sudden or gradual. Hell, they built whole schools fighting over that. Fighting over what? This? When you read that, you know that they don't see it. If you see it, it has nothing to do with direct. And that's what he says. But what it does have, we have people who are quick and we have people who are slow. I was notoriously slow. See? There are the quick ones. They hear it, bang. The sixth patriarch was quick. See? And as slow as I am, my God, they had some others. Mumon Khan, the great Mumon, he even took longer working on Muji than I did. He took about 8 years to do it. And we have people who come in, if they don't do it in a day or two, they're disappointed, see? But it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with getting out of my head. He says, this Dharma teaching of ours, both its direct and indirect versions, has proclaimed no thought as its doctrine, no form as its body, and no attachment as its foundation. What do we mean by a form that is no form? To be free of form, and here's what his answer is, to be free of form in the presence of forms. See, this means simply that you are not trapped in the illusory thinking, the conceptual thinking, see, of this is good, that's bad, I want to hold on to this, this is real, that's unreal. It means that you don't attach to anything. Attach means that I don't get caught up in the picking and choosing aspect of it. See, the great Xinxin Ming, this is the third patriarch, says the supreme way knows no difficulty. If this Buddha mind is here now, which it is, the difficulty comes from what? Your ruminating mind. The mind that sits in behind your eyeballs, for some of you right now, and experiencing yourself as separate. See? Don't try to conceptualize what the world of oneness is like. You cannot conceptualize it. That's what they tell you. It is inconceivable. But can I experience and manifest it? Absolutely. That's what enlightenment is. The moment I no longer stay stuck in the grasping mind, the picking and choosing mind. See, when I no longer get caught in the form, and do you know, well, he'll tell you that, why we don't get caught in the form. See, do you understand, see, that the form is continuously evolving, changing. It's not fixed. See, it's in a process of change. We should understand that. Although many of us sitting here right now feel that this is really real. And see, and I base all of my actions on the assumption, unwarranted assumption, that this is a fixed entity. It's changing. So long, and see, why do we get in problems if we are attached to the form? The moment that this moment is over, see, if I stick to my notions of what I think you represent, what I think you've done, see, what I think you intend, I'm caught in an illusion because each moment is new. If somebody is rude to you right now and a day later you're still pissed off about it, you first are denying that person the opportunity to evolve, to change, and they are. You're changing now. Put a mic up. We got Gyonin here as a doctor. Put a microscope on her body. Have her put an electron microscope on you and try to find matter. She can't do it. Little buzzes of energy. Then we penetrate into that empty field of energy. And what do we find? Nothing. We go smaller, smaller. That's what we are. I love that one quote I've said before, the one physicist putting his arm on a chair. He said, literally, it's true to say that I'm putting a shadow on a shadow. And he also said, it is vibration. It is the vibration of energy. And it is theoretically possible that if I could control that vibration, I could simply move through a solid object. Just so happens that in the old days, and particularly with the Tibetans, some of them claimed that they could do this. At least modern science says that it is theoretically possible. See, theoretically possible. See, but so long, do you understand? You shouldn't hold anybody, you shouldn't condemn anybody to a moment that is already past. Why do I do that? Because I'm deluded, I'm in my delusional mind, I'm thinking right and wrong, I'm thinking picking and choosing here. He offended me. See. But which me? You mean the one that I will never know again? Or you mean this one, right? It's gone? Well, I mean, it's gone. It's gone. This is true of the other person. You're playing. in a make-believe world, an illusory world. You hold on. Some of you are holding on to shit from your parents. See, give it a rest. Give them a rest. Give yourself a rest. And you know what you're holding on to? Not any kind of an actual fact. You're holding on to memories, not of an actual event. By the time most of you have reached your age where you are, see, you don't even remember what the actual event was like. You just are grasping on to the memory of a memory of a memory of a memory of a memory, and each time you drudge it up, see, you put your new spin on it. Whatever your psychological state, you keep spinning it. You keep spinning it. How many thousands of dollars have people wasted sitting down with some guy in a room and just wailing shit out of your parents for not understanding you? What isn't understood is your own ability to stand up and take responsibility for yourself. You are where you are as you are. Now wake up. If you choose not to wake up, then don't bitch as you sink into the mire. He says thought after thought. He said no thought means thought after thought, not to become attached. It doesn't mean, now don't misunderstand, that we suppress thought. If you suppress, if you hold it, I'm not going to think. There must have been a school practicing at that time, because this was their knock on silent illumination. People who are trying to sit in a vacuum. And certainly this isn't the silent illumination of the great Hongzhe. Well, how do we know for sure? Well, you read Hongzhe, and there is nobody clearer, more precise description of this great, amazing, dynamic place than Hongzhe. And, see, the Shoyoroku, see, is his collection. He compiled those koans. See, and it was the Rinzai master, see, who were against or talked about this silent illumination. See, that must have been, and I think it's probably this, make yourself blank, make yourself blank. No, you focus on your practice. See, and what, how it occurs, what actually happens. Dogen says it. Here he says, let me give you what he says here. Thought after thought, not to become attached. That means don't think about your thoughts. Just don't think about your thoughts. So long as you're alive, thoughts will float up. But what actually happens, see, the more I think about my thoughts, see, I reinforce that pattern. Consequently, if we really obsess on it, and that's what an obsessive compulsive nature is, they obsess on it. See, they continuously enforce it over and over and over and over and over. See, this is what Schwartz does out there at UCLA. He tries to break that. He tries to actually pull you away from that obsessive and giving you something that slows down. And I think that he has success with that. And he certainly has had his own experience in Buddhist sitting. He doesn't talk about it, because if he did, Domon heard him interviewed on that, he would, the people that he wanted to evaluate what he's doing, they wouldn't take it seriously. See? But if you can see it from our perspective, see, even if I try to replace sort of delusional thoughts with something that's not quite as destructive or disruptive in my life, we're still dealing in delusion. Roshi once said that to one of the people of his succession, who was a therapist, and literally sat up there and said, essentially, I'm going to be doing a lot of therapy inside that room. And I was kind of surprised that the person made that statement. And I was equally surprised, because normally Roshi would let things like that go. But the very next day he gave the talk. And he said, you can do that if you choose to. He says, but you're replacing delusion with delusion. And there is no freedom there. There is no liberation there. See, so Dogen says, not one thought is worth a second thought. The sixth patriarch says, see here, thought after thought, not to become attached. See, in the wording here, always when we have translators work, it's a little awkward. I was going to try to talk about that a little more, but I'm not going to try to do that now, see. But no attachment to it. It means when a thought comes up, don't ruminate on it. Don't ruminate on it. If you know what that means, you should all catch it. The moment I can throw out a triggering word for some of you, bang, you'll pick it up and you'll run with it. What do you mean, run with it? You start to think about it. And the moment you start to think about it, you literally close your vision to what? To this moment. You come in the door working on a koan. See, you come in, and it's almost like watching blind people come through the door. In the way it was explained once, using the metaphor or the analogy of a dark room, a pitch dark room, I used to think that's exactly what it was. But the thing is, it's almost a true statement. You can watch. Sometimes it comes out, and sometimes some of you have had little peaks where the energy becomes so heavy and so rigid, it's almost palpable. And then there's a blankness. I can't see you, see? Like that. And what the teacher tries to do is to get you to wake up, come out of it, and you can watch the change in the person's face, in the person's eyes, and they start to come down. See, and then they start to come here. And as you come here, you know what always happens. You start to feel better. You actually start to feel better. Then, if you commit yourself deeper until you completely sever that cord of delusional thinking, and you settle into this now. That's all there is, folks. This eternal now. And you settle into it as one body, oneness. That state is fearless. There's no fear there. See? And what is it? It is selfless compassion. Why? This is the best way you can take care of yourself. See, if you're fragmented and even thinking you can take care of something out there, you're in delusion, you're a schizophrenic. But if I can take the backward step and I can cut that flow of thought, see, that thought of separation, then I settle into the oneness here. See, then I realize the best way I take care of everything is just take care of this. See, what needs to be done? Sometimes something needs to be raised up. Sometimes something needs to be pushed down. Sometimes I simply sit and wait. See, the great Haku and Zenji said about this enlightened state that they think doesn't exist. He said, sometimes I allow the 10,000 things to turn me. Well, he is the 10,000 things. And the most amazing part of it is that there is something of a subtle nature here, of a profound nature that we can't give voice to. See, he is the 10,000 things, and he allows the 10,000 things to turn him. See, in one of the koans, see, servant of another. This is the another who sits while this turns. And then he said, sometimes, because this eternal now, see, has great intelligence, I turn the 10,000 things. And then sometimes I simply sit and observe. What an amazing way to live. And when we truly experience it, it is bliss. This is the great Dharmakaya, the reward body. See, this great unseen body, the Dharmakaya. See, mudji, if you like. When you actualize it, when you put it into practice, with what? With this body right here, which is the Nirmanakaya, the three subtle bodies of the Buddha. See, then right here, right now, as I am, I live in a state of bliss. See, and more, see, the reality of this great teaching is becoming known. Thought after thought, not to become attached, whether it's the past thought, a present thought, or a future thought, let one thought follow another without an interruption. That doesn't mean to continuously spin it, to look for thoughts. No, no, no. The moment you look for a thought, then you're attached to the thought. It means to sit in this state here of non-distracted awareness of what? The now. See, and then just allow what comes up to come up. It is your karma. See, who you are, where you are, as you are. You are the great wave rising up out of the ocean. In the world of quantum physics, The quantum wave collapses into a particle. And the particle collapses back into the ocean. See, of the quantum. Or if we're using the great ocean, see, it's a metaphor for this now. The wave rises up. What is the cause that produces the wave? We can call it karma if you want. But what do we have? We have bottom geography. We have energy of wind. See, and a wave rises up. See, and that wave, because of the conditions, cause and effect. You're born. You rise up out of the great emptiness, out of the great Dharmakaya. See, Alaya consciousness, however you want to call it. See, you rise up. Here you are. It's your karma. You have responsibility for surfing this wave. I threw that in for you, Kosin. See, but truthfully, this is your wave. That's what you are. See, and if you can just drop the picking and choosing, but if you can stop bitching about who you are, how you are, where you are, you're not going to change that. See? But how you experience that can be changed. All of a sudden, you either are a deluded sentient being or you're an actualizing Buddha. If you're an actualizing Buddha, see, then, see, the basic ground, where you stand, where you walk, is great joy. See, great joy. Again, don't make up. It's not a new agey thing. Sometimes I weep. See, sometimes I laugh. I was telling Mazen again today, and most of you probably heard, see, how profound it is. See, Maizumi used to always tell me, Nyogen, in the midst of laughter, always be aware of the tears. And in the midst of tears, always be able to hear the laughter. See, what an amazing thing. Once a thought is interrupted, the Dharma body becomes separated from the material body. See, not in reality, but in your head. Then you're living in dualism. Okay? So long as you live in a dualistic state, you're going to suffer. See, and this is the great way out. See, the teaching of the Buddha. See, and the great Eightfold Path. He teaches how to live a meaningful life. Buddha doesn't reject anything. He doesn't tell you not to enjoy yourself. Lesser people have put all kinds of attachments onto it, hung all kind of junk on sutras. If you want to know what the Buddha taught, the Diamond Sutra said, here he says, doesn't say that women can't do it, that you have to wait for your next birth as a man. Buddha never said that. Buddha said, good women and good men, no perception of a subject. That means in your head, don't sense yourself as separate. And then from the outside, no perception of an object. That's the whole teaching of the Diamond Sutra. And then once you don't experience yourself as separate and you don't see anything outside of you from an objective perspective, then he says, do meritorious deeds. How much simpler? Anything beyond that is junk. Perform meritorious deeds. Why meritorious deeds? See, that's how we sustain, we maintain, and we allow everything to become enlightened. That's the way out of suffering. He said, once one thought becomes attached, once one thought, you pick up one word and begin to conceptualize, every thought becomes attached, which is what we call bondage. And that's where most of us live all of our time. And in the bondage, we live in hell. We live in suffering. But when you go from one thought to another without becoming attached to any dharma, see, not attached to anything. See, I don't judge it from a dualistic perspective. And don't think you're going to lose the ability to discriminate. You can discriminate. I've said this over and over again. You will know the difference between a rattlesnake and a kitten. And you will also know that you don't reject the rattlesnake. It comes out of the same place, this great Alaya consciousness. this great ocean of emptiness. If you're a physicist, it comes out of the quantum world. See, born into this now, at this time, a place that can never be defined, identified, but you cannot deny the experience, the reality of it, because you are its living manifestation. You should be able to see that. If you can't, that means in your practice that you're staying trapped in your own notion of how it is. That's why some people struggle at the hazy moon. The point is that you bring your junk in, you put it down, and you force yourself to adapt to the form of the hazy moon. Look at the number of people. Judge for yourself. How many of you won't just simply freely allow it to flow here? But you have to hold on to your notion of how your practice should be. So long as you do that, you're going to stay in delusion. Oh, you'll gain from meditation. You'll gain a little bit of peace of mind, maybe a little bit of health. See? You'll find out that your interpersonal relationships go a little smoother. But you're still in delusion because the first heavy bounce, the first bump in the road, turns you over. See? So you're still just functioning a little smoother in samsara. And that's okay if that's as far as your aspiration goes. And for some people, that's it. Then meditation, zazen, see, will meet those needs. But if you truly are sick of sickness, if you truly want to transcend the world of pain and suffering, see, then our aspiration has to be for the great enlightenment of the Buddha. The realization, the recognition, see, of this enlightened state here now. And then we actualize at it. And the actualization is very, very difficult because the habits keep pulling us and tugging us. So we snip it. Tugs us, we snip it. See, and soon we become much freer and we begin, see, to catch a glimpse of what it is like to move in an unfettered way. Good friends, no form means externally to be free of all forms. If you can just be free of forms, the body of your nature is perfectly pure. That is why we take no form as our body. No form as our body. See, there isn't any rigidly held conceptual ideas about what body is. This is the great body. This is the body of reality. This is your body. See, this, see, is the delusional state of separation. See, again, we don't deny it. But see, the inner world has to turn. Buddha said, only difference between a sentient being and a Buddha, an enlightened one, is upside down thinking. It's that simple. Buddha said it, upside down thinking. See, so what do? Empty yourself out. See, become this empty vessel with no attempt to suppress thoughts. See, and if you see, it has to be totally, totally fluid. If you rigidly hold to any form, you're missing it. He said, but don't think about nothing at all. Once your thoughts stop, you die and you're reborn somewhere else. It means don't try to rigidly blank yourself out. See, nothing wrong with thoughts if I don't attach to them. See? And it slows down by itself until you eventually begin to see this functioning of this great mind. Not the mind of delusion, mind you, but this great enlightened mind. It's there with you right now. See? And at its basic level again, understand the peace, the serenity that you're looking for is there. You're keeping yourself separate from it. See? It should be joyful. It should be freed from fear. And it has amazing generosity. See? The vow of a bodhisattva, all of you sitting in here with your raksus and your robes, see, your vow, see, is to save all suffering sentient beings. You should be involved in meritorious good deeds. And the way you save all sentient beings is you forget the self. He said, once your thoughts stop, you die. He says, Don't misunderstand the meaning of this teaching. It's one thing to be mistaken yourself, but quite another to lead others astray than to criticize the teachings of the sutras while remaining unaware that you are lost. This, I guess, is the critics of this great way. If you don't understand what it is, if you can't see the most amazing beauty of it, thus the reason we proclaim no thought as our doctrine is because deluded people think in terms of objects, and on the basis of these thoughts, they give rise to erroneous views. This is the origin of all afflictions and delusions. See, nevertheless, when this school proclaims no thought as its doctrine, those people who transcend objects and don't give rise to thoughts, even though they have no thoughts, they do not proclaim no thought. You see what, here again, this is maybe could be expressed a little because it's for any translator, it's hard. What is he talking about, see? So long as you don't attach to anything, you allow, and here is what purity is, things as they are. To be non-defiled means that I don't project out from a dualistic position in my head. I don't project out the judging, see, the rejecting, the grasping on this great thing. This is what you are. And remember, the scientists can't find where this out here begins or ends in here. Nobody can. See, there's something here that we're touching on that's absolutely amazing. You should begin to kind of sense, my God, what is this? Is there something here, see, that can eliminate the low-grade infection, see, that's all sentient beings experience? This is dukkha. This is the sense of unfulfillment. Yes. See, what does no, and here he talks about to negate. What does no negate? No thought. See, it's very simple. Separation, no thought. See, drop all separations. The great Dogen Zenji says, the study of Buddhism. See, what is the study of Buddhism? Buddhism, here, again, we don't need to think in terms of a doctrine. See, some kind of rigidly held set of rules and regulations. See, the study of Buddhism, the study of the enlightened mind means what? See, it means to study the self. You. See, it means to study yourself. Well, then what does it mean to study myself? It means to forget yourself, to forget the dualistic notion of separation, to forget this notion of I as a fixed entity. You're not a fixed entity. We're in constant flux. We should see that, and we should be particularly sensitive to it. A year ago, we lost Wagyu. He's not here anymore. If he was so fixed, where is he? And this is true of all of us. We're in a process of change. And so long as I stay attached to this form and not realizing this form is impermanent, it's in a process of change. As we sit here with this number of people, mutations are taking place within your body. Mutation that will bring this body down. But what does it mean? Oh my God, it means the end? No. The great wave on the ocean, when it rises up, has it ever left the ocean? No. Can it leave the ocean? No. But if I understand it from an intellectual perspective, I say, oh my God, that's all there is, because I can identify it. See, I can see its direction, I can sense its duration. You. See? And I say, okay, this is the great ocean. No, it's not. No, it's not. That wave, that direction, if I get trapped in the illusory body of what is seen, what is experienced, do you see that? You have to see that if you can catch that image, that wave. That wave is not the ocean. But it is not separate from the ocean. The great ocean is the wave. The wave is not the ocean. We have this when the great Tozan looked down and caught his reflection. In his poem, it simply said, I am not the way, but the way is me. And Keizan Zenji, in giving his teisho, his talk, see, on the Buddha's enlightenment, where the Buddha said, I, the great earth, and all sentient beings, simultaneous, everything, the moment I woke up, everything woke up. And Keizan Zenji said, Shakyamuni Buddha is not this I. See, this I is Shakyamuni Buddha. This wave is not the ocean. It is limited by direction and duration, but it is eternal in that it can never leave the great ocean. And the great ocean is the unborn state. What an amazing thing. Where is their fear? See, the wave simply returns to the great ocean. And all of the characteristics of the great ocean are continuously present, never ending. What does it mean? What does it mean? That's what we have to experience. See? And in quantum physics, it goes beyond that. See, in the quantum world, in the world of the wave, and they cannot find where it is, but one particle, in whatever way they work, see, one photon, see, can be found. It smears out over a place. That isn't quite right, but that's how it is. See, there is just this one thing. This is what you are. Reality is the body of thought, and thought is the function of reality. See, this place right here. He said, when your nature gives rise to thought, even though you sense something, remain free and unaffected by the world of objects. See, again, here, in this very ordinary way, see, don't think that you become brain dead, that you become an automaton. See, here you will experience all sorts of amazing things, and you will be sensitive to it. But again, when you sense this, when you watch these things, don't be attached to it. See, the point is simply to look out here in the most amazing way and not get caught with your picking and choosing mind. Don't judge it. That's what the old masters mean when they say, to dwell in the state of samadhi forever. What is samadhi? Non-distracted awareness. You simply be awake. Be conscious here now. Conscious continuously in this now, this path. And if we do this, and if you commit yourself to this forever, you can't take any halfway measures. Because that's what you are. You're not a halfway measure. You are the total thing. And any halfway measure will keep you trapped in delusional thinking. So please, let's take good care of it. See, when we see the path, when we hear the path, and we have the opportunity to practice the path, let's not waste our time.